KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. Coming up, how Hurricane Katrina victims are touching a chord with Californians and how Southern roots are bringing the storm home to many African Americans.
Only thing we have to do is stick together and go and help these people. Stop talking, put your foot down, close your mouth, and do it, no matter what color they are.
Also, legislators wrap up their work on bills about gay marriage, the minimum wage, and driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, and the governor promises to veto them all. Plus, cruising Highway 9 with local bikers.
We got Santa Cruz Hells Angels, we got San Jose Hells Angels, grave riders out of Scotts Valley, Vietnam vets, both chapters, Freedom Chapter and G Chapter out of San Jose. We've got Rapture Ready, which is a Christian club.
Those stories, plus animal rights in West Hollywood, it's the California Report. Much of California spent the week mobilizing to help the victims of Hurricane Katrina. The governor deployed hundreds of California National Guard troops to the Gulf Coast. Cities opened emergency shelters, waiting for evacuees to arrive. From school kids to corporate CEOs, people pitched in, emptying piggy banks, writing multi-million dollar checks, some even offering to open their homes to displaced residents, whatever they could do to make a difference. In Oakland, the Grand Lake Theater became a staging area for relief efforts. Volunteers spent hours taping up boxes full of donated clothes, diapers, and other supplies, all of it headed by truck to hurricane survivors. East Bay Congresswoman Barbara Lee put out the call for help. Her campaign director, Chloe Drew, is organizing the effort, along with the NAACP Disaster Relief Fund.
People all day have been pulling up in cars that are barely running. I mean, these things are barely going, and they're emptying their cars out. The people who seem to have the least are giving the most.
By midweek, they'd collected tens of thousands of dollars, and garbage bags full of donations piled up everywhere.
We're looking at maybe four sidewalks filled with clothes, school supplies, food, Pampers, you name it. People have brought it here today.
Volunteers like Amani Red Horsewoman got swept up in the response. She came to drop off some donations and ended up staying all day.
It's been an amazing effort, actually. People have really come out for the people in New Orleans. It's been really special.
The faces and voices of these displaced storm victims would touch anyone's heart. But here in California, many people have deep personal roots in the Gulf Coast, especially in the African-American community.
Now, is that Frederick Douglass up
that
there?
That is Frederick Douglass, and Frederick is on this mural because he was an advocate of the migration of African-Americans to California. He said it's a great opportunity. If you're able to go, you should seize upon that. So many of his friends and confidants did indeed.
At the African-American Museum and Library in Oakland, curator Rick Moss is describing a colorful mural of black history.
California has been known, and probably still is, known as a place where you can come and sort of reinvent yourself, drop old baggage, and become, in effect, a new person. And for many African-Americans, that was the case.
Moss points out that there were two big waves of black migration to California from the South in the 20th century, first during the Depression, then in the 1940s, when word spread south that California was a place you could make a good living.
That wave that came out at the crest of the Second World War was even greater. And, of course, the stories that continue to circulate in Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi, those stories of California, the streets being basically paved with gold, fruit hanging on trees, the opportunity to not only work but to own a house were tremendous.
And in places like Richmond and San Francisco in particular, there were a lot of folks working in the shipyards.
Absolutely. The shipyards offered a tremendous opportunity. These were places operating 24 hours a day with all kinds of operations, you know, hod carriers and riveters and, you know, welders, you name it, there were jobs available.
California may have opened doors that were closed shut in the South, but most of these transplants didn't forget their Southern roots. Many still celebrate those connections, even today.
That's okay. We're talking to her.
Sure, I'm just going to get these three pies and this cookie.
Tradition is alive and well at the Gingerbread House Bakery and Restaurant in Oakland, where people come for hearty meals and take away treats like candied pralines and sweet potato pie.
TJ has her own recipe of jambalaya. It's called spoon jambalaya. So therefore, all the things that you would want to make it flavorful
At lunchtime one day this week, plates full of gumbo, jambalaya, and cornbread flowed from the kitchen to the tables of diners like LaShawn Thibodeau.
A friend of mine told me about the place, and I brought my friend.
What did your friend tell you?
She said it was a really great place and that I'd like it. It's, you know, Louisiana Creole food.
In between bites of gumbo and crawfish pie, Thibodeau talks about her family. They came from Louisiana.
My uncle had a property there that he's lost, and we had friends that were there. But we're just praying everybody's okay, and, you know, it's a very traumatic experience for everyone.
The Gingerbread House restaurant opened its doors in the Warehouse District of Oakland 30 years ago. Today it sits, somewhat defiantly, in the shadows of Highway 880 and the elevated tracks of a busy public transit line. Trains, cars, trucks, and buses rumble past the place constantly. T.J. Robinson presides here as the restaurant's founder, an example of a daughter of the South who made good in California. Her parents left Louisiana in the 40s. Her father was in the service, while her mother worked in the Richmond shipyards. Her daughter, who goes by the proper Southern name Miss Noel, describes how they've been glued to the news since Hurricane Katrina began approaching New Orleans.
As it unfolded, we realized that it had gotten worse and worse, and it was going to be a difficult time, not only for that part of our United States, but for the world and for all of us, because we're all basically in this together.
So do you have any family back there still?
We do. We do. We've been fortunate enough to hear from some of our family, and then, of course, we have some that we haven't heard from, but we're praying, and she's always in meditation now and in deep prayer, and more than anything, she's hoping that she can go back to Louisiana or even to Texas, where some of the folks have moved on to, just to give them a little hug through her food.
Like anyone who's been to the Gulf Coast or has family there, Miss Noel and her mother TJ worry about Louisiana's future and whether life can be restored to normal.
You're concerned about all of it. You have people that are ill. You have people that are babies. You have infants. You know, you have people that don't have a lot of money or a lot of means. You think of people who are restaurateurs. You think of people who have places that give love in Louisiana, because that's what Louisiana is about. That's what New Orleans is about.
In the coming weeks, the Gingerbread House will host a benefit to help Katrina's victims with music, dancing, and, of course, gumbo and jambalaya. That spirit of compassion is also being felt in Southern California as members of the African American community there are reaching out to hurricane evacuees in all sorts of ways. KPCC's Frank Stoltz has that story.
33-year-old Latisse Mills sits in her small white stucco rental house at 99th and Main in the heart of South Central LA, the TV and fan abuzz. She patiently pulls and twists the long black braids atop Latoya Holland's head.
They're going to offer them jobs. They can't go to the job interviews with their hair looking wild and crazy. You have to look presentable. So I'm offering my help. I can help them. As many heads as I can do to help these people, I'll do it.
Mills met the 23-year-old Hollins at a shelter housing over 100 hurricane evacuees near downtown L.A. Mills is a nurse on disability, the mother of four. She had to borrow gas money to drive there. Holland says she's amazed by the hospitality.
Because New Orleans is not like this. You will never find nobody that just up and offer to do things for you for nothing. Not in New Orleans. And I'm thankful for these people.
The New Orleans native knew her own troubles long before Hurricane Katrina. Money problems, broken relationships, a lost baby during a pregnancy earlier this year.
I have prayed, you know, for a change, and I guess this is it. And I'm starting all over, and it don't really matter, you know, because I asked for this.
What do you mean you asked for this?
I asked for a clean new start. I asked them to take away all the sins I've done, all the hate I had towards people. I just asked for a brand new start all over again.
Hollins talks of learning how to drive a bus and reuniting soon with her 4-year-old son, Devin, who is staying with an aunt in Baton Rouge. She manages a smile, revealing 2 gold teeth. Holland says they're just gold coverings. It's the style.
Basically, if you see them like this, you know they're from Louisiana.
I wanted to see them. I wanted to see exactly what they look like. Forget what's on TV.
Rodney Johnson heard his friend's wife was helping out hurricane evacuees and had to stop by. The 26-year-old nursing home assistant manager gave $200 to relief efforts, and not just because his stepfather has relatives hard hit in Mississippi.
I feel a real big connection, and the reason why is because most of them are coming from a ghetto back out to ghettos again. For us to be from a different ghetto, say California, that's beautiful that we can step up and help these people because we recognize where they're coming from. I know how hard it is being black, being a minority. So for Latisse to step up and braid people's hair, go down there and pick them up, that says a lot about people. That says we care.
Hairdresser Latisse Mills says she is moved by God to help.
Only thing we have to do is stick together and go and help these people. Stop talking, put your foot down, close your mouth, and do it, no matter what color they are.
As for Latoya Hollins, she loves L.A. The weather is gorgeous. And like many of the Katrina evacuees who've been sent here, she's thinking about staying. For now, though, she takes it day by day, each day made easier by people like Latisse Mills. For the California Report, I'm Frank Stoltz in Los Angeles.
There was a storm in Sacramento this week as well, a political storm, also known as the end of the legislative session. Lawmakers wrapped up their work for the year, and our Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers has been keeping score. John, let's start with the big three, if you will, gay marriage, driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants, and raising the minimum wage here in California. Democrats in the legislature passed all three, and the governor is promising to veto all three. What does that tell us?
Well, I think what it tells us is that there's really fundamental disagreement on these issues between majority Democrats and the governor. These are all three are issues that majority Democrats care about, but as you said, it's been long known that the governor was probably going to veto all three of them. Two of those bills, the driver's licenses for illegal immigrants and the minimum wage increase, were vetoed last year. I think the Democrats really fundamentally believe these are important issues. They need to be brought forward. I mean, certainly there is a political calculus to be made as to whether or not the public supports the Democrats or the governor. But it's a fundamental disagreement, and it's probably going to continue when they come back next year.
On the gay marriage issue, if you've listened to what the governor has said over the last year or so, he's kind of been all over the map on the issue. With San Francisco's Mayor Gavin Newsom says Schwarzenegger told him he supports gay marriage, and yet it took him less than 24 hours to say he's going to veto it. Why do you think he moved so quickly?
Well, you know, Scott, I think that the gay marriage move and the speed of that move to say he was going to veto the bill really seems to have been designed to stop any of the hand-wringing among his conservative base. And I think for the very reason you pointed out, that the governor has made statements in the past about his personal feelings that seem to indicate that he really doesn't have a problem with the idea of same-sex couples marrying personally, that he wants to leave it up to the courts and ultimately the people to decide. And I think given that kind of ambiguity in what he has said in the past and his base being very concerned about this issue, of course, very much opposed to it, this was pretty much out there to squelch any of the worrying, any of the hand-wringing.
In any case, yeah, hardly the final word on gay marriage and maybe some of these other issues as well.
It is not the final word. Specifically with gay marriage, as we know, the current law is still being challenged in the courts. The court cases are pending. There's also a ballot measure now being circulated for signatures to ban gay marriage in June of 2006. That ballot measure could appear. For that matter, there also could be one on increasing the minimum wage that could go to the ballot and directly to the voters that could work in favor of Democrats. Neither of those issues going away anytime soon.
Well, one thing the legislature failed to pass was a bill that the governor was supporting. No surprise, I guess. It was a bill to encourage solar energy development in California. Why did the Democrats turn thumbs down on that one?
This one was an interesting one. You know, Scott, it was debated right up until the very last day of the session this week. It really became loaded with political baggage. There was a small group of powerful labor unions that apparently convinced majority Democrats in the Assembly to amend the bill to make prevailing wages for the people who install the solar panels a requirement. A prevailing wage gets into this thing, of course, obviously, where you talk about exactly how much people get paid. The unions, of course, would want to ensure that. It had stronger rules as well about who could install the panels. Obviously, maybe more union members would do it. The Republicans consider those amendments really dead on arrival. So did the governor. And it's hard to know whether this was a policy issue that the Democrats believed in or whether this was either their political interest group base or trying to get the governor to veto something he supported, namely solar energy.
Well, did they get anything done? It sounds like a lot of wheel spinning to me.
They got some things done. There was a proposal to ban junk food in schools. It's going to the governor. He says he's going to sign that. The Democrats have passed legislation to restore some money for health care for prostate cancer patients. There was money for transportation needs, a lot of money, over $1 billion in the budget. We can't forget about that. So the Democrats say some progress was made, but of course there are some issues that are pretty divisive out there.
And finally, John, rumors the governor is going to announce his plans to run for re-election next week. What do you think of the timing of that?
It's very interesting. I think the governor's base really has made it known in lots of circles that they would like the governor to come out and say for sure he's going to run because it'll help the fundraising for the special election. And the governor has been pretty coy about it, but you know he's a master of theater. And my feeling is maybe we should be checking the guest list for The Tonight Show with Jay Leno for this coming week because, I mean, if he's going to do it, it's probably going to be in a very big, dramatic way.
All right, John, then we'll keep an eye on the late night shows. John Myers, our Sacramento Bureau Chief. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Scott.
That sound is familiar to just about anyone who's taken a summer road trip in California. You're left in the dust as a pack of gleaming Harley-Davidsons roars by. In the first installment of an occasional series, Postcards from Highway 9, reporter Emily Meehan accompanies some bikers as they cross the Santa Cruz Mountains, California's motorcycle heartland.
In between Santa Cruz, Northern California's unofficial court of tattoos and counterculture, and Santa Clara County, home of the famous Hollister motorcycle rally, lies Lompico. This small town has been the headquarters of the Ghost Mountain Riders Biker Club since 1982, when Lyle Fleming and some buddies were sitting on their bikes on a hill in the moonlight.
And the ridge had an old Indian burial ground on it. And we were sitting around digging all that kind of vibe, you know, and started saying, yeah, we live on a ghostly mountain, man. We live up here on a ghost mountain. Yeah, we ride on Ghost Mountain, too. And, you know, one thing led to another. Pretty soon we started calling ourselves Ghost Mountain Riders.
Fleming is now president of the Ghosties, as they call themselves for short. They've grown from 3 members to many and often host events that bring other motorcycle clubs to the area.
We got Santa Cruz Hells Angels. We got San Jose Hells Angels. Grave Riders out of Scotts Valley, Vietnam Vets, both chapters, Freedom Chapter and G Chapter out of San Jose. We've got Rapture Ready, which is a Christian club. We've got Evil Twins out of San Jose. We've got Sons of California, The Posse, a new club. they're retired cops. The Watch is here, Henchmen, both chapters. We've got San Jose and Livermore here.
Bikers from all these clubs gathered on a recent Saturday for the 15th annual Biker Appreciation Day. They start out at one of 3 destinations within an hour's drive of Lompico and head for the hills. At Stevie's Bar and Grill in San Jose, riders wearing leather jackets emblazoned with club patches and insignia trade tales and compare the airbrushed images of eagles and skulls on their bikes. The Ghosties hand out aces and spades to participants, because the ride is also a poker run. At Callahan's Bar in Santa Cruz, more cards can be pulled out of a brown paper bag. The goal is to complete a winning poker hand by the time the ride wraps up at the Brookdale Lodge. Getting there from anywhere in the flats means a ride up winding back roads, past vineyards, meditation retreats, and children's camps. Fleming and Jerry Gerard, the owner of Callahan's, agree about the conditions that make the mountains so popular among bikers.
All of the Santa Cruz Mountains are premier riding country, and there's a lot of bikers live here because of that. We have nice roads, Highway 9.
Nice weather, nice riding places. Got the beach, got semi-mountains, a lot of good-looking women running around, bikinis and stuff.
The ride is short on Biker Appreciation Day, because on this day, the real action is the rap party. In the lodge parking lot, a DJ plays classic rock, and a fashion designer sells kinky leather lingerie from a biker fashion booth. People gather around their bikes, check out the engines, and consort with friends from other clubs. Some haven't seen each other for decades, but everyone is familiar, and everyone has a story to tell.
My name is Brant Monet, and everybody calls me Evil. Tattoo Evil, yeah. It's kind of an old joke. I'm probably the nicest guy in the world.
In a tattoo booth on the site, Don the Cookster holds still as Monet runs a tattoo pen across his shoulders.
See this full eagle that's right here? Actually, it used to be broken wings a long time ago. In the 70s, I went down on my bike and broke my leg. And that's when you put broken wings on for your club chapter. Well, 2 wives later, 4 kids, all the bad luck's gone away. And so I went and put full wings on. Now it's been a great life.
The crowd is awash in colorful history. One of the mainstays of the scene is Sunshine Nelson. She's got a plan to start her own motorcycle club, and she'll call it like it is.
Old Broads on Hogs.
Sunshine has just started recruiting.
Well, there are a lot of gals that seem like they're real interested. There's something about riding with a whole lot of gals that loved ride. It's just great.
She got her start riding with the Hells Angels and the Iron Horsemen in San Diego in the 70s.
Rode 48 years on the back, and I've been 11 years up front. I just want to tell them, hey, try up front. You're going to love it. You'll never go to the back seat again.
As people begin to take a load off at the end of the day, it's time for a raffle, and Fleming announces the results of the poker game. The proceeds will go to a camp for the developmentally disabled and also to a couple of down-and-out bikers.
Four kings going once. Four kings going twice. Four kings, Connie, congratulations. All right, here's your new friend, Connie. Everybody will want to see you in the bar.
As night comes, people head inside to the dance floor. Like a big extended family, they make plans for the next pack run, the last days of summer, a 90-mile loop around the Santa Cruz Mountains that takes place next week. For the California Report, I'm Emily Meehan.
That's the California Report for this week, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Rocho. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering by Tom Krimkowski, Danny Bringer, and Paul Lancour. We say hello this week to our new interns, John Kane, Kasia Newman, and Allison Johnson. The producer is Stacey Bond. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. Susan Kennedy is our managing editor, with help this week from Pat Flynn. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, committed to improving California's healthcare delivery and financing systems, on the web at chcf.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California. And TIAA CREF, serving those who serve others by offering financial services for the greater good. TIAA-CREF.org. Charitable Auto Resources, a full-service vehicle donation program management firm which helps nonprofit organizations increase their revenue. Online at charitableautoresources.com. And the Stewart Foundation, for coverage of important issues in public education.